Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM special treat for us. Today, we have our regular co-host, Vas Larikos, back on air. Vas, how you been doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Very good. Good to be back with you. Appreciate you giving me a little time to get the new restaurant up and running to the standard that we want. So, but anyway, happy to talk Ravens football with you. One of my favorite times of year, taking inventory of the roster and preparing for the draft.
Yeah, I've been with many consecutive busy weeks of activity following the start, and really leading up to, and also following the start of the league year. Now, a little bit of hibernation this last week, with prep for the draft, no doubt being the big thing inside the castle. But also, they just really had one visit. It's from George Fant, an offensive tackle who's been around the league with the Jets, the Seahawks, maybe another team or two. Never really done very much. But Fant in to be potentially a swing tackle, the third tackle for the Ravens.
Yeah, he seems to be backup quality. Certainly been around the league for a while. Former, I believe, he was a top 50 pick, if I recall correctly. But I remember him most with Seattle, when their offensive line was not very strong. But sure, the Ravens certainly need some depth at offensive tackle, no question about it.
It's interesting that he started a business recently, which is much more interesting than any kind of left tackle or any kind of tackle play you might have for the Ravens. He started a business trying to find college basketball players who've never played football or haven't played football recently anyway, who would make good candidates to be on an NFL roster. And he found one guy. It was a Colin Granger, a 6'9 player who he thinks could be a tight end. So kind of interesting business model or business again. I was hoping I'd get to talk to him. And then I saw The Athletic already scoop me on the story. I heard about it from another source, and I was pissed off about that. But anyway, it goes to see that George comes for a visit, and that news probably is going to get out. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the big part of the show we want to talk about today is ordering the Ravens draft needs by position group. And we'll talk a little bit about each, but I think we're just going to alternate in terms of bringing up position groups rather than have, dueling lists of top 10. It's just that there's not that much differentiation, I'm sure, between the two of us.
Right.
But why don't you start us off, Vas? What do you think is the least important position for the Ravens to have a draft pick?
The least important position to me is running back. The Ravens are very well stocked with Derrick Henry, one of the very best RB1s in the league, Justice Hill, one of the very best RB2s in the league, and Keaton Mitchell, if he can regain his form, is one of the best third running backs in the league. And they also have Rasheen Ali, who got some action last year during his rookie season, didn't do a whole lot on offense, did make some contributions as a return man. But when you already have at least three, if not four, quality running backs, I think you're well set, and that is not a position where I would suggest or recommend succession planning, because you want a guy with fresh legs coming out next year, hypothetically, to who needs more snaps, and then you can maximize all 4 years of his rookie contract.
Yeah, that's a valid point, because for a running back in particular, if you're going to take a second-round pick or a third-round pick, any kind of day two pick, you're going to want a guy you maximize that rookie deal on. While the room is certainly still full right now, I don't really have a lot of faith that Ali is going to be an NFL running back after what happened last year. It just does not seem special in terms of characteristics to me. Hill and Henry are both older now, and so they're guys who you've got to be concerned about replacing. Keaton Mitchell, there's an injury flag on. We don't know if he's going to be the same player he was. So to me, it was the fourth least thing, but all the bottom four are pretty low in terms of the likelihood to do it. But I think there are reasons why they would draft a running back.
Apparently, it's a good class. That's what the pundits have been saying. It's a good running back class. Yeah. It just doesn't seem very hard to find a good running back if you want to invest assets, whether that's this year, next year, 2 years from now. That's my take, sort of.
Lamar Jackson certainly rises all boats in terms of the quality of play. On my number one position, the least needed is quarterback. And they've got Jackson and Rush, who are both signed for the next 3 and 2 years, respectively. Devin Leary's on the practice squad for now. He may or may not be the guy they want to keep there. So it's possible they could go with a late round selection that they like, with the intention of putting him on the practice squad. By the way, that could be done at running back too. With the number of sixth and seventh round selections they have a good chance to slip a guy through to the practice squad initially at a lot of different positions that they could give a shot to. But quarterback for me is pretty clearly the number one position where I don't think they need a draft pick.
Sure, I definitely agree with that. I have quarterback as my third least necessary important position to focus on in the draft. All the points you made, certainly agree with. Hope to see Lamar Jackson extension sometime soon. Seems that there's some rumblings of that. Just out of curiosity, what's your take on the Rush addition?
It doesn't do a lot for me, but as backup quarterbacks go, he's probably not bad. You know, your season is over from a Super Bowl contention standpoint as soon as Jackson goes down for the full year. But if you lose Jackson early in the season for, you know, some sort of arthroscopic procedure or whatever it might be for 4 weeks, if Rush can come in and go 2-2 for you, then you still are in the hunt. So, you know, he's that kind of a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Okay. My next position is tight end. And that could certainly change if there is a move made at the position. But when you look at the position as it stands on the Ravens' current depth chart, as we record here on the 10th of April, yeah, Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, perhaps the best 1-2 combination, most likely the best 1-2 combination in the league. And we have Charlie Kolar coming back from injury, and Patrick Ricard is also would be kind of considered a tight end. I think that's probably the best place to categorize his play. So you're already four deep there with two good pass catchers, two good blockers. I just don't see very much need there. The only question is, how long are all these gentlemen going to stay on the roster with all three coming into contract years?
All four, in fact, if you include Ricard.
That's right.
Yeah. So, to me, that's the biggest thing. I hate the stacked contracts, and everybody else hates to hear me talk about cutting or trading a tight end. And not everybody else. There's some people who understand it, but there's a very vocal minority who all they do is bash the hell out of me for wanting to trade either Likely or Andrews. I don't want to trade Likely. I think he has a much higher value in the future, but it's all about who they can actually sign to an extension. Likely, right, it may not be feasible. And if you don't have Likely forever, you have Likely for 1 year. That's what you have in terms of 2025. So there's an important number on that there you've got to come to. They have to make a move even to draft anybody in about the first five rounds of tight end, I'd say. Mm-hmm. If you're going to draft around six, around seven tight end, you can do that. You're effectively, what you're doing, in particular in the seventh round, is you're replacing the need to spend UDFA dollars from your pool by a draft pick to secure a player. But all that does is secure him for camp. And then if you don't put him on your roster or get him out of IR or do something with him, then you lose him. If he's IR, you lose the developmental value. If you put him on the practice squad, he can be poached. And you know, that player is going to have to be sold on the notion that he's around. I still think there's a fairly good chance the Ravens unwind or unstack this set of contracts on or by draft night. And to me, the Likely re-signing is the most important single thing they need to do in the front office before draft night. If they can get that done, that takes that off the table. They're back to being able to trade Andrews. Or even Kolar. If they want to trade Kolar, that would be okay too, because I think he might not be affordable after this season. So yes. We'll see how that goes.
With Andrews, been a great player for the Ravens. I would not be opposed to trading him at this point if they can get a considerable, appreciable return. I think his postseason struggles are real, and I think they have been throughout his career. He's never caught a touchdown in the postseason yet. And after, I believe he's a franchise leading regular season touchdown. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Ken.
I think that's right.
And someone had a theory that because of his diabetes, he has neuropathy in his hands when it's very cold out. And I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not a doctor, but he has drops in the playoffs, key situations. Tennessee game. Several years ago, ball bounces off his hands, and obviously we saw what happened against Buffalo this year. So I do think Likely is the ascending player. His yards after the catch ability compared to Andrews is much, much better, certainly. So, and he started to, especially last year with the jump balls, being able to come down with balls in the back of the end zone with two guys on him, as Mark has done for so many years. So that'll be the way I would like to see it play out.
It sounds to me like the theory on Andrews came from a doctor. And if that doctor would love to come on air and kind of just explain it on a film study short, I would love to do that. You just ask some questions about it and see what. So if you can find me the link or the tweet that came from, that'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm. With you in terms of Andrews, I still think Andrews could be the long-term signing. I'm not saying it's the better choice, but it might be the right player, right price choice for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. To bring him back and have him for another 3 years or so. It's not like his injuries are of the Pitta-esque variety where they're a chronic, recurring, you know, huge risk every year kind of thing. He's had, you know, a few little bumps and bruises, the car accident and some other things that have gone wrong, but there's nothing that's going to last a long time. So I think he's still a viable player. The question is whether or not they can get likely assigned to a deal that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. My fourth least likely position, actually it's my second least likely position because I had tight ends at third, to be drafted or to need draft capital is kicker. Mm-hmm. Now the Ravens will have competition for Tucker in camp. The Ravens have never drafted a kicker ever. So they had Stover left over from the Browns, and they had a parade of people come through camp that went off to other teams, all as UDFAs, and kicked very well. Hauschka and Lutz and Graham Gano and you know, Billy Cundiff came here. I think Billy Cundiff might have been a free agent. He kicked elsewhere right before Baltimore.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And then, of course, Tucker, a UDFA and one of the greatest UDFAs of all time. I think, you know, Randy Brown has probably got his hands on the pulse of things and has 3 to 5 guys they like that they'll go to one after the draft and make that signing, would be my guess. They might do it with a 6th or 7th round pick, but my guess is they don't draft a kicker. And we'll see how that plays out, obviously.
Interesting. They've drafted, I believe, 2, if not 3 punters.
Yes.
I think Richardson was drafted in the 3rd or 4th round, which was pretty high for a punter back then. I think, but that's just off the top of my memory. He was drafted, and you would think the kicker's a probably more valuable position than punter, I think, at least in my opinion. Anyway, to the point on Tucker, obviously he had a down season last year. Looked like he was dealing with the yips at some point, and then he was trying to overcorrect, and then the ball was sailing. And we also have some off-the-field issues that came to light this offseason. So drafting a kicker would not be out of the question in my mind. Reading the tea leaves from recent comments made by DaCosta, I do think it's not a lock that Justin Tucker is the kicker for the Ravens next season. So we'll see what the draft brings. So, yes.
Okay, go back to your point about Richardson. They drafted a quarterback, Wally Richardson, but Kyle Richardson was not drafted. They did draft Zastadil in 2002, Cook in 2006, and Stout in 2023 or 23, I believe, or 22, whichever it was.
Yep.
All right. Okay, who's got the next? Yeah, I think
I'm up next. And my next position is inside linebacker. So that's my 5th. I had special teams 4th. Inside backer, you know, obviously they have Roquan. Did not have a great year, in my opinion, last year. Some might disagree with that. I thought some of the struggles in coverage were his fault, and he did not do very much as a pass rusher either. Trenton Simpson was sort of given an opportunity early on. He did not earn much of a role on defense. They did have some defections with Board and Harrison, but I still think they're probably in a pretty good spot with the idea that they're going to play more dime if they can fill their big needs at the top of the draft wish list.
Okay, with you all the way, you can add Christian Welch to the group because we're really talking about special teams costs with Harrison, Board, and Welch. And Harrison Board obviously were sharing the weak side linebacker role by the end of the season. Simpson was completely off. So Simpson's season is really a disaster, but he went from playing all 3 downs to start to playing 2 downs with a dime package in around week 3 or so. Then they switched to rotational basis by series, which is terrible because that means it's an open competition. It's not, they're not trying to layer in him on first down. They like him better there. They don't like him on third down. Open competition. And of course, Harrison and Board took over basically early and late downs. And they went with that at the end of the season, where he, and the only playing time Simpson was getting was in blowouts. So I think they're going to need two inside linebackers by hook or crook. And I don't think they'll waste a high draft pick on either of them. I would expect no higher than a fourth round selection on inside linebacker. I think that one of them will be a guy who is a two down thumper who can play Mike or Will. But they really need a backup for Roquan. They do not have that guy on the roster. And they could go to the street and get him at the appropriate time because it's a big size and shape pool. Very deep. And like there's always, you know, they've made do calling Josh Bynes twice in the last 5 years, right, or in the last 6 years, I guess, and made that work. So they can find their next Josh Bynes, whoever that is. LJ Ford, also a guy they acquired after the season began. But I think they do need potentially a backup Will in this draft as well. And that could be the same guy, by the way, that can do either. Then they layer in Jake Hummel, who now is here and will take a big special teams role and may have a defensive role. And they layer in the use of the dimeback. And I think I would, you know, and anyone who's listening to this show knows how much I love the dime defense over basically all of the forms. I think it's cheaper to operate. I think platooning at the weak side linebacker spot gives you a lot of opportunity to get your better coverage players on the field for the highest leverage downs. And that's it's just something I think is should be the Ravens' way. It always was. They seem to have gotten away with it really starting with the Pease era of defense. And I hope they're back to it now with Orr, even though honestly, that really is a surprise to me that Orr has been so amenable to the dime defense, given his own background as a three down Will.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, good points all around. I am certainly in favor of dime. I'd rather sacrifice run defense for coverage ability every single snap, if given the choice. So I think they definitely need to add bodies. I don't think they need to spend, as you said, an early draft pick. I would hope to maybe you can address that need in the fifth round. Because it's just size and shape pool, as you said, and some of the best linebackers in team history have been undrafted free agents. They don't need to invest, especially with Roquan already taking up a good sized portion of the cap.
Yep, with you all the way on that. So you had inside linebacker there as somewhere in there, the fifth, doesn't matter.
That was my
I think my fifth also was wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's not a high value position. It is. And I understand that, but they have two guys tied up for 2 years who are their one and two receivers. Mm-hmm. And both, you could even have Flowers tied up for 3 years if you go with the fifth year option on him, which they may not. I think he's on track to be worth it. Bateman is one of the most favorable team friendly contracts in the entire NFL among second contract wide receivers. So like him, of course. Hopkins is a one-year band-aid. Tez Walker is still a developmental guy you have with 3 years left. And this is the year they got to find out what they have there. And then they have Tylan Wallace, great re-signing, really loved it. Brings a lot of value as a run blocker. He catches the ball whenever they throw it to him. Doesn't complain about his role. And he's a guy who can keep the offense being a fresh legs offense. So if you have a role for five different receivers, as I think the Ravens can have this year, then one of the things you get out of that, and three tight ends for that matter, and a fullback, and you know two or three different running backs, your skill position players are going to be frequently rotated and be fresh legs against a defense you face. So I think that's a positive things to have. They will probably draft a developmental wide receiver. If they do, I want to get other characteristics out of that, like a punt return guy or a gadget guy, maybe, so it doesn't all fall to a smaller set of players. They can get that gadget guy other places, but it'd be nice if they had that or some specific skill set that you can scheme in a sensible way with the current personnel they have. So lots of choices, and I like the method they used this last year. They got a little bit of value of was maintaining that vet stable on the practice squad. You know, again, it's a cost saving measure. You can't spend money everywhere. And, you know, the Ravens have done very well by having young receivers who don't cost a lot of money on the roster. Whereas you see what's happening to the Bengals. They're eating up an enormous portion of the cap, even though they're great. They're eating up an enormous portion of the cap.
Yeah. got to pick your battles, and I think my receiver is one of the best places to continue to replenish with early round draft picks and let the other guys walk. And you could hypothetically not have any expensive receiver and still have a really strong group.
Would you be in favor then of taking a wide receiver high in this draft? Because what you're saying is you're replenishing. Yeah.
So I sort of broke my list down into two tiers. Maybe you could even say three. Wide receiver as well as interior offensive line would be tier two for me, tier two needs. And then I have five other positions that are tier one, and I hope that all of the top 100 picks are spent in that tier one. Okay. So I wouldn't go too high on receiver. I did have them as a slightly more important than offensive guard, and probably for the reason you mentioned is it's a rotational position, offensive line or interior offensive line. Hypothetically, it's not. So I'm excited to see what Tez Walker can do. Making this list, a lot of it depends on your view of some of the second-year players, which we'll get to as we continue. We haven't seen too much from a good chunk of the last year's draft class that we did not get a good read on through the rookie year. So I will go on to my next need, which is interior offensive line. I thought that bringing back Ben Cleveland, while surprising, was a good way to add depth. Optimistic that Daniel Faalele can continue to get the job done, even when it's not pretty. And I do think Andrew Voorhees could hopefully have a good year. Linderbaum is the question there, as with are they going to pick up the option? I don't think they should. and if worst comes to worst, you can replace him. I don't think he's an all-pro type of center. He just never, I don't think, going to have the anchor to, you know, in those fourth and shorts to be able to push guys off the line or hold up necessarily against the really creme de la creme Justin Simmons type defensive tackles. But I would advise against taking that position early, because then again, you're going to be in a situation, if you did in the first round, as you were with Linderbaum, where just the money does not add up. It's not feasible to pay those guys as like offensive tackles.
Yeah, it's basically becomes a 4-year contract on the IOL with no option, and you spend a high portion of your draft capital there. You really want to get the market friction that goes with that early pick. I had a couple things to say about the guard thing. First of all, I have it a little higher on my list. I have it fourth highest. But the issue is this, that what they really need is a left guard again, who can move a little bit and allow their right-handed run game to work properly. Faalele will never be that guy.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
In terms of being a reasonable pulling guard, but the Ravens have made a lot of very average athletes into pretty good pullers. So the bar doesn't have to be super high, but I think they need to get someone. The real problem is Linderbaum, that they have to plan to replace him next year. So if they're going to draft one interior offensive lineman, I'm afraid it has to be kind of somebody with a fairly good pedigree that they think can move to that spot. So Tyler Booker would meet the need, but I don't want to pay that kind of price. So it'd be another player probably somewhere in there. Greg Zabel would probably meet the need. He could probably move over and play either guard or center. But again, that's going to be a fairly high price. So you've got a handful of people who would be outstanding for it, and they're all fairly high priced. The guard group, by the way, I would say is fairly thin this year. I was surprised at how thin the IOL is. Now, I'm kind of always a little surprised by that, and the reason is that a lot of offensive tackles move to play guard. But even after I'd moved a fair number of people over there, in terms of my own rankings at guard, I still ended up with what I thought was a pretty thin group compared to a lot of other positions that are out there. Like the defensive line group is amazing this year. Mm-hmm. The cornerback group is pretty deep. The safety group, I think, has more ball hawks than normal. It's pretty deep. So it's just the interior offensive line group is not very impressive. And it may be that a lot of the contracts that were thrown out in particular last year was in anticipation of not great guard classes or not great IOL classes coming out. So anyway, I think the Linderbaum is the other player that they really got. It would be great if they could figure it out in time for the draft. I don't think they can. And I'm with you that I don't think there's any way they pick up the fifth-year option.
Yeah. Some folks in the flock think the way to advance further in the playoffs is to build the impenetrable wall that's going to keep Lamar clean forever. I think they're better off investing those picks into pass defenders that are going to generate more takeaways in the postseason. That would be – there's no right or wrong. Just in theory, theoretically, I would avoid taking an interior offensive line early while you have Lamar at his peak of his powers right now.
Yeah. Okay, with you that. And that was your call on IOL. You had it a little lower than I did. So I'll go to my next position. In terms of draft capital, I could put this a little higher, but my next one is cornerback. Mm-hmm. The team has enough talent to get by in 2025 with what they have in the room. And in particular, if they're willing to downgrade on their fifth outside corner or their fifth cornerback to be somebody like JAD, then they can do that. I think JAD's probably done in Baltimore, which opens up the possibility of adding another corner that would be good. Also, another corner with the aging group that includes Humphrey and Awuzie is going to help them make decisions about 2026 that I think are important. So Awuzie is a one-year guy. Humphrey is getting to be very expensive under the cap. Humphrey may move to safety, maybe somebody they want to move to slot. It would really help if they had not only TJ Tampa, but another young cornerback to kind of sift through in terms of talent this year. It also helps in terms of the depth in the group. It's a great corner group. A lot of ball skills are there. And, it's reasonable to take one of those guys. It's very reasonable that the Ravens' first-round pick might go at corner. And certainly might go in round two as well. So there's about seven guys, I think, who probably meet that that characteristic, maybe even more, to be drafted as high as 59. So anyway, I like the corner position in terms of its availability. I think it's high, but if the Ravens try and conserve draft capital there and draft a fourth-round guy, I wouldn't be shocked either.
Right. So these corner is my fourth highest position, and any position or any player that plays one of these top five, I'd be happy with in the first round, second round, third round, whatever, wherever the value can be found. But I would like to try to stay within these positions. Quarterback's a little bit hard to gauge because we didn't see anything from Tampa last year, just maybe a handful of snaps on defense, if that. So we don't know what to expect there. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on Awuzie before we circle back. But I think you have, if you can make it, upgrade at safety, then you have two other players who can come down and take some quote-unquote cornerback snaps, whether it be in nickel or the dime in Hamilton's case. So cornerback's important position, first, second, or third. They, as I used to say, you can't have too many, so wouldn't be mad about it in the first at all. Thoughts on Awuzie?
So Awuzie had a very good year last year, both in terms of tackling and in terms of coverage. And I was actually a little bit surprised by that. He was effective as he was and still got cut by Tennessee. We talked a little bit about whether Trey White could come back. I think it was Trey White or him, and Awuzie represented a better value. So they did it that way. I think Trey White could probably do exactly what Awuzie is doing, just for more money. Mm-hmm. Or very similar to what Awuzie is doing, let's say, but for more money.
So he was the key player of one of the key players, at least, of
the turnaround.
The Bengals turnaround, and he's got the high pedigree, and I'm glad to hear he had a good year last year. I hadn't had a chance to really dig into those metrics, been so busy.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Trey White. Trey White was one of the key players in the turnaround with Baltimore, the Baltimore defense, too, in terms of
Awuzie 2 years ago when he was with the Bengals, when Anarumo, yes. You know, they went on a free agent shopping spree and turned around the defense really in 1 year, and his play at corner was one of the key parts to that. So always been a good player and glad to hear. It seems like quite the bargain signing there.
Okay, so I named corner. I think we're up on you. Yep.
Okay, I am going to go to offensive tackle. You need three tackles for sure. Ronnie being re-signed was obviously the key move of the offseason thus far. And you hit on Rosengarten, so you're in good shape starter-wise. And they each have several more years of team control, but you really need some depth behind it. So I do think that's a somewhere in the tier one need, first, second, third round, probably not the first round, but second or third round, who can also maybe play some guard if you need him to, that'd be a good pick there.
Yeah, I think so too. I wouldn't rule out taking an offensive tackle with a first pick if the right guy drops. Kelvin Banks, love to have him at 27 if that happened to happen. Don't think it will, but if a good guard drops to them, if good offensive tackle drops to them, they probably play him at guard for 2 years and then have him take over for Ronnie Stanley in 2027. Mm-hmm. When Stanley is signed effectively for 2 years, $44 million, there's a third year team option effectively for another, I think it's $16 million on top of that in that last year. So it's not like Stanley's going to walk away from that money, but the team could be fairly ambivalent on him returning or not, depending on the quality of his play, what they have in terms of options for replacing him and whatnot. But yeah, I'd like an offensive tackle who could be slid into guard if that's if he could then, if there would then be the hope that he could move back to tackle.
Right. Agreed.
Okay. So my turn. Mm-hmm. Let's go next with safety. So it's the third most needed position. The Ravens desperately need a pure ball hawk back end safety. No compromises on who that is. There's lots of guys who fit that bill. There are some corners who there's already talk about them having to move to safety. Jahdae Barron is a guy who could play either corner or safety. I think you'd kind of be wasting him to play up at safety, frankly. I'd start him at corner, but he could be a guy who could play safety if you needed him to. There's lots of other ball hawks, and it's a very layered draft. So you have in the first round, you have Barron or Emenwori is really the pick of picks. He is the Bo Jackson of safeties, meaning he brings the most physically to that position that anybody in the history of the game has. Speed, size, everything. There's nobody who's had his combination of outstanding athletic traits. And there are people who talk about him being a raw safety, by the way. The guy, you know, allowed a 37 quarterback rating against him this last year. However raw he is, whatever they're seeing in terms of gains, well, good. I'm glad they're there to have. But the results are fantastic, you know, in terms of what has happened this last year. So I think if somehow he were to drop to the Ravens, that's probably the most excited I could be about any first-round pick. Maybe Barron more. Maybe Barron even a little bit more, because an outside corner has a lot of value too. But they got guys, Billy Bowman is in the middle of the draft, and Makuba, the guy from Texas, Andrew Makuba is a good third or fourth round selection. And they got Xavier Watts, who has an incredible 13 interceptions and zero touchdowns allowed in the last two seasons combined from Notre Dame. So there's guys they can get all the way through the draft, and they would provide that flexibility for Hamilton, and it could be Washington as well, to come back and play underneath and play nickel as appropriate.
So I have safety as my number one need of all. I think that putting Washington and Hamilton on the back end certainly solidified the defense, stopped getting beat over the top. However, the takeaways were off last year. The Ravens did not generate as many takeaways as the previous season. And I think Hamilton can be better utilized in the slot as the nickel or the dime. And I think Washington is better utilized as a nickel. So, and there's really no depth at all, at least playable on defense, depth behind them. So I wouldn't be opposed to taking two safeties relatively early, potentially. And that could really unlock Hamilton to be that queen on the chessboard again and put Washington in a better place. I know he graded well, but his size does cause issues from time to time. So I have safety as my top one.
Okay, so that's great discussion topic here. Let's say they get Emin Wari at number 27, or even they trade up to get him at 20, as high as 22, say. If they were to get Emin Wari, would you still be in favor of drafting a second guy for the back end, or would you go to the market and try and get a post draft half field guy after it worked out so well last year with Eddie Jackson?
I think you let BPA dictate that. I kind of like a more limited BPA, and some positions are maybe not even considered at all until later in the draft. But if you had another safety in the third round, that was somebody, I think it's a vital position for this defense, for the quarterbacks that you have to battle in the AFC. So I wouldn't be against that at all.
I'm completely with you in terms of it. It's got to be kind of like a scaled BPA where a quarterback is worth three times as much in terms of relative draft capital that you're willing to give up for it. And a safety is worth, depending on the skill set. If he's a free safety, I think he's worth about 1.4. If he's a strong safety, I think he's worth about 0.6.
So. Right. I completely agree there. Again, back to the run defense, pass defense specialization. We want the pass defense. Really what we want is, if Marcus Williams could turn back time to his first season in Baltimore and finish out his contract the way he was playing then. Because that's exactly who you want, that rangy free safety with ball skills.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Did I name safety or did you?
You named safety.
Okay, so you're next.
So I will go to outside linebacker, which is third on my list. Odafe Oye, uncertain future as we stand. Kyle Van Noy coming off a very strong year. We don't know how long that's going to last for. You did see some positive development from Tavius Robinson, particularly when he was put his hand in the dirt and was able to rush as a true defensive end. And you don't really know what you have with Adisa Isaac. And that's another heavy rotational position. So I do think it's a pretty significant need. I don't want to walk away from the draft without taking an outside backer somewhere in the top three or four rounds. If they do, then I do think you need to go to the street and find some quality depth there.
Yeah, I think they need to find a guy on the street anyway, right? Maybe you're saying that, like draft a top guy and then also get a yeah, I'm for that. The group on edge is perilously thin right now. They lost Harrison as a run defender, which is a very minor loss. I think they finally are gonna have to just write off David Ajabo and be past that experiment. It didn't work out, and frankly, it's going to leave a long mark on this town. And there's been a couple of those over the history of the game. I mean, Dennis Pitta's hip injury plays for other players who have hip injuries for a fact. And there is one in this draft coming up. A corner that's coming in with a pretty significant hip injury that you have to ask the question is, are the Ravens really willing to go through that again? And you
hope not.
No. Yeah. So you have that, but Ajabo I think is probably done in Baltimore. And I think there will, the thing that he will cause is they're going to always NFI the player if they're able to. And if the player is going to lose a developmental season, there's several guys out there this year who got injured either during the season, and Kevin Winston is in this group. Siobhan Revelle, very highly thought of, a very highly thought of cornerback, is also in that group. I just don't see how the Ravens can draft him around. Jihad Campbell has a big medical flag. And, it could be 50 shades of gray on how serious that flag is in terms of a torn labrum for an inside linebacker. But it makes him a second round pick for me at the very highest.
Right.
So I'm not taking that risk. I'm not losing a year of development. I'm not losing a year of play. And I think that's what they hopefully have learned from the Ajabo lesson. And in this draft at the edge, they'll have lots of choices in the first round of who they can pick from. I think they'll also go to the vet market as well, because they've been so successful there. And that should fill out the group. But both Oye and Van Noy may be gone after this year. There's no one else who looks like a pass rusher with the only possible hope really remaining is Isaac.
Right.
And yeah.
Robinson's mostly a run defender.
That's right.
That's his skill set. Yeah. Is anybody in particular you like in the first there?
You know, the edges are the last group I'm doing. Okay. And so I'm struggling.
Don't spoil it.
It's not just that I don't want to spoil it. It's that I don't have an informed opinion for you right now. I mean, I know who the big names are and I've got them on a list and ready to go through, but I haven't done all the detailed scouting. And it's this time of year is just, it's a lot of work to go through and watch as much film. And there's something I do that I really appreciate and enjoy, but it takes a ton of time is, you never have high or low lights for players. And so I try and go back and find out how did they get burned when they get burned. Mm-hmm. It's especially useful mm-hmm. for cornerbacks in particular. And I can't seem to find tape of every target for a player. So what I'm trying to go to is go to the PF things and go to individual game logs and see who beat them and then go to that highlight, go out on YouTube, look at the highlight, you know, try and describe how the play happened. And so I'm doing some of that. I'm, you know, doing common threads in interceptions, things like that. But it's all very time consuming. And it's something that I love, but it, you know, for a month here, I'm just absolutely shut down to all other podcasting.
Understood. Yeah. Theoretically or philosophically, I like going with the guys with the traits and see if Chuck Smith can coach them up, even if they mm-hmm. don't have tremendous collegiate production. Anyway, let's go on to the last group here.
Okay. So I'll introduce it, I guess, the interior defensive line. Fantastic draft. We did the IDL show already with Jake Vogel. It's out there if you want to take a listen. I think it's out there. Might not have been posted yet. Might post on Monday. But great, great players on that interior defensive line all the way through the draft. And one of the problems for the Ravens is that they don't really need the highest value position, which is the three tech. So a lot of the guys who might be at the top of other people's boards aren't really the key guys for the Ravens. They'll get less value because Madubuike is present. Now, that's a good thing for the Ravens, actually. And there's a lot of really high-quality nose tackles in this draft. Guys who push the pocket, guys who are unbelievable two-down run stuffers. And this should be a lot of fun to go through in those first 2 days of the draft and see who the Ravens take. Would not surprise me if they double-dip. Brent Urban is hanging out there. Michael Pierce, of course, retired. Brent Urban is kind of stuck in limbo until the Ravens decide what they've got. I do not think they'll sign a free agent. I think it'll be drafty. And Urban or drafty. Those are the mm-hmm. two, I would say.
Yeah. So I had defensive line as number two. So just to summarize my top five, safety, defensive line, outside linebacker, offensive tackle, and then cornerback. Those are the big five coming in. Certainly agree with you without Michael Pierce. I want a pocket pusher if you're going to get another big body. Two gappers have their value, but not anywhere close to the top 100 in my mind. And you could possibly upgrade off of Urban. My former co-host on the other Ravens Way podcast, Yuri, has been pounding the table to get a better pass rusher and than Urban and a better pass rushing rotation and try to emulate some of what the Eagles were able to do in their Super Bowl run with just body after body of talented pass rushers. So I'd certainly be in favor of that anywhere early on in the draft.
I think what the Ravens have shown that they have the ability to do is get a complementary pairing on the field. And Travis Jones and Madubuike are tremendous together. They drive the Ravens pass rush with Jones really being the key guy there for taking double teams. I'm more tolerant of low production, high pocket morphing nose tackles. So, you know, Jones is a perfect example of a guy who does exactly that. He doesn't really make a lot of the plays himself. He gets some push and gets some initial pressures. That's what I basically want from the nose tackle. And there are a lot of guys who fill that bill in this draft. So it should be very exciting.
Great. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to really dig into defensive linemen at all, but I certainly hope that this is a good year to restock because they need some restocking for sure.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Voss, take a moment. Tell us, first of all, where people can reach out to you online and talk football, but tell us a little bit about your restaurant and the current situation.
So I'm online on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. But I'm not online very often because I've been extremely busy working 80, 90 hours a week as we open our new restaurant. Fiamata Restaurant and Lounge, located at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg, Maryland, about halfway between Westminster and Owings Mills. We've been humbled by the support of the neighborhood and everyone that's come to dine with us and have drinks or whatnot. 7 days a week. Our kitchen's open from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and then until 10 o'clock on Friday and Saturday nights. Looking forward to hosting Easter coming up in about a week and a half. Phone number is 410-833-5777. But it's been a pleasure. I've owned a restaurant before, never opened a restaurant before. To see your vision come to fruition and have the support and a great staff, front of house, back of house staff. It's been a lot of fun. It's been great.
We've been following this restaurant has been opening up. I did have a chance to go in the first couple of days to go see it. It's one of the things I like about it is the layout is a lot of space between the tables. And that's something I don't associate with Italian restaurants normally. I normally think about myself, and I'm a fairly big guy, but I take off my coat or whatnot. I'm like knocking over somebody else's drink on the table next to me, but you don't have that problem at your place. It's nice. Lots of space and good food. What we had was really good. So anyway, Vasa, always appreciate doing the show, of course, with you. Other folks out there want to make a plug to make sure you join us on draft night. Okay. Now, I don't know if we're going to have Voss for any of the three draft nights. He certainly is welcome to come for whatever he'd like to, but with his restaurant opening, my guess is it might be difficult. But other folks out there, if you would like to be a panelist on day three in particular, I would probably love to have you. Send me a DM. I'll try and arrange for that. And if you're just someone who wants to enjoy the draft, it is a great experience watching the draft together with a group of Baltimore Ravens fans who are all Baltimore Ravens centric in terms of their thoughts on draft night. And we have a kind of a very good system for kind of making our picks ahead or the players we'd like to see roll out in the next round or so while we wait for the Ravens picks and of course react to each pick with oohs and ahs as it occurs, but a lot of fun. For Ross Larikos, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.